The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Books Podcast, which comes to you from the Edinburgh Books Festival. I'm Claire Armistead, books editor of The Guardian and Observer. This weekend at the festival has been dominated by novelists discussing the politics and ethics of fiction. So we thought we'd take a breather and head off for the Edwin Morgan Poetry Prize. As is often remarked, it's not the winning, but the taking part that matters, especially in a competition where poems are submitted anonymously. So we got all five shortlisted to read to us. Make your own judgment, because we won't be revealing the winner and runners-up till the very end. Daisy Behag's entry is called Peach. Daisy grew up on the south coast near Brighton, now lives in Bristol, and she has BAs and MAs in creative writing and has published poems. And tell us about this poem before you read it.
For me, it's kind of a strange poem, especially a strange poem to read, because you often sort of know vaguely what reception a poem is going to get from people. And this one, I've had really, really differing reports from different people about it. Some people seem to think it's like a nice, happy, sensual love poem, and certain other people seem to read something quite dark into it and almost sinister.
Do the women like it better than men, or vice versa?
The first set of opinions is generally men, who see it as quite a nice poem, and women tend to maybe like it less. I don't know, just see it as a bit sinister, which is strange because, you know, as a woman, I quite like it.
Would you read it for us?
Yeah.
We can make up our own minds.
Yeah. Sunbathing on the lawn, you watch the way the ants crawling up your empty water glass collect, almost circular, around the white fogged patch of your fingerprint. You remember earlier taking a white peach from the bowl, thinking slicing would be tidier in front of him. Mostly out of laziness, the sun, the new ease between you and him, you bit into it whole. Juice ran from your lips and chin to stain your dress, pieces of flesh staying behind in your teeth. You wonder if the ants are eating tiny molecules of peach, or what else from your day could have been left behind. The tiniest flakes of you, maybe. Do ants eat human skin? You remember how last night, over you, he raised his hand. The strange shock you felt when he put his fingers in your mouth, watching, wanting you to taste yourself.
It's very sexual, isn't it? It's certainly sexual. So let's now move on to Malcolm Watson. Malcolm, you're an artist and you live in Hull.
I am. I was just talking to Daisy about the difficulties of making a living through art and making a living through poetry, neither of which has much money in it, unless you're Seamus Heaney, of course. So I was fortunately, I've sold several pieces in the last week, so I'm feeling particularly flush today.
And you were encouraged to write by Philip Larkin, no less.
I was at the University of Hull in the 60s and 70s, and he was the librarian then. There was a competition for student poets in 1970, and I was one of three chosen to have their work vetted, shall we say, by Philip Larkin. I think he was trying to say nice things when he didn't want to say nice things about anything, but nevertheless he said some encouraging things to me, and fortunately this year I won something called the Larkin and East Riding Poetry Prize, which only took 42 years from when Mr. Larkin said I should continue to write poetry. So it's been a long haul, shall we say.
Like the finest wine, it takes longest.
Oh, good. That's very good. Thank
so let's now hear your shortlisted poem, The Perils of Surgery. Can you just tell us why The Perils of Surgery?
It's a double-edged thing. You will see as you go through the poem, it's not just the people who being operated on that are in trouble, it's the doctors themselves. So this emerged from my time when I was 2 years in the Hull Royal Infirmary as a hospital porter many years ago, trying to finish a PhD. One of Hammurabi's laws decreed that if a doctor killed a patient or destroyed his sight, then he should lose his hand. Guthrum, king of Burgundy, had the sorry surgeons of his queen, who died after her operation, slaughtered on her marble tomb. The man who failed to cure the blindness of Bohemian King John was bound and tipped into the Oder. Even he was luckier than the unsuccessful operator on the 12th Pope John, burned at the stake, or the other whose deficient competence still failed to shoo his death away, flayed by the pontiff's pals. 2 to 10 on theatres, before I settle down to War and Peace, I have to tidy up the shambles of the changing rooms. I stuff the reeking gowns and caps into the laundry bins and start to clean the blood and pus and lymph and snot off 20 pairs of surgeon's wellingtons and clogs with vim and ether, cloth and scrubbing brush. Some consultants favour tennis shoes. Every boot and shoe is white, or used to be, and must be married to its mate and buffed up, spotless, good as new. After a heavy list of ops in all four theatres, another heap of leaking bags must be delivered to the sweating keeper of the furnace door. Certes, here is all God's plenty in a jumble on the floor. Neatly labelled leg or kidney, lights and lungs, and eyes and breasts and spleen, and Lord knows what. The surgeons, not surprisingly, have fled the scene.
Oh, you can see that's not a doctor's eye view. That's definitely seen from the bottom of a trolley. So now let's move to Catherine Sowerby. Catherine, you are from these parts. You're from Glasgow. And have you had individual poems published?
But not a collection.
But not a collection yet. And you're a graduate of Glasgow School of Art.
Yes.
And your poem is called Forest Glass. Just tell us a little bit about this.
It's a poem that's from a collection that I'm working on at the moment, inspired by a logbook that belonged to my dad, of flying exercises. He was a small aircraft pilot, and the way I work often is sort of collaging from other sources, so it's I'm not quite sure what the original sources were for this poem, but it's kind of a mixture of personal memories to do with my dad, as well as things linked with the flying exercises.
Is this what they call found poetry?
Not entirely. I mean, it's, I guess it has elements of that. Forest glass. They sit with their backs to me, the scientists, on trampled bluebells, black jackets harlequined with small angles of light and shade. I stay under the cover of ferns where the nightjar nests, eat stolen eggs while they dip their bread in pickles and warm gin, unfurl silk handkerchiefs and bask like adders on crushed bedding, play fiddleheads. A razor in my pocket, I slice dead stems from the mulch, suck the sting from cuts on my fingers, and through parted leaves I watch swifts fly gold, map-winged.
Very nice. That's very brisk, isn't it? Because this you can submit up to 60 lines for this, and you've gone for a sort of tighter, shorter form.
My poems are mainly short.
Now I'm going to move on to Mike Vallely. Mike, you also don't describe yourself as a poet. You are an antiquarian, bookseller, collector and researcher. That's how you record your profession.
Yeah. I wrote poetry as a student, as a young man, a bit like Malcolm, and had to go and earn a living. So it's after 40 years. In a way, I saw Edwin Morgan's obituaries, and I remembered him when I was a teenager going to his lectures. I was a vigorous man in his prime. And then suddenly, having not seen him for years, I saw the photographs in the Guardian of him as a 90-year-old man. And it was quite a shock. And that made me think, well, he kept going and producing work for many years. So I thought, well, let's start again and start writing again. And this is the first poem I wrote after about 40 years.
And your poem is called Look Hameward Now. So tell us why and what this means.
The poem's about the ageing. You're thinking of Edwin, having known him as a young man. And it's meant to be a bit of an elegy or lament for him. And I took the words from Lycidas, you know, the bits of the poem are from Lycidas, which is an elegy on a poet. So I tried to write one for him. Look heavenwards now. They found this picture in Morgan's attic, dandy dress for Urbino, blue velvet, loose smoking, thick horn rims, hair fantastic, Eddie for the Guise Mayor Hillbilly set, Perjink, Uncle Deuce tones rising up high like bubbles fae fermented giggles fly, Guy Goofy, bounding on like a trooper, charm as sleek at rabble, jammy number. Next Hobbs Bomb performs Big Farts. Then Lars Trite Thoughts spewing up metaphysical shite. Whit, Cow Tower for Jodsworth Cheese Flatters. Just Daft Dreams. Art really doesn't matter. Money or postulate, Max Macker Light. Money a tickle, marks a tussle. Night loves kettle close. Fear of Ku Klux Noxians. See they last picks that gun in Botoxian flushed in the pan. Geese horin, no boring concrete wingdings stuck into typho griffins. Geese biker tats, eye piercings, wheest morons. Pioneer hormone, likes bushcraft exploring. 60s wild child, glaked mirror dodger never, lines of blister pills, pure sodia. Paddy's Market Boys here will fill out your shelves, soak the right rare bits off your bains of the cells. Whilst great Erwin Ginster toasts down in hell your vegan breakfast, ringing finger bells. Both trill their matching caftans. Kick as yo, the mora fresh cubes with dried lime tea. To yo.
Tell us about the dialect it's written in.
It's written in Scots, and there are variants of that. So these are words which I would have heard used around me and used as a child.
And some of the words we are also familiar from sort of older poetry, like Sleek It, of course, is the yes. Robert Burns, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. So those words were used currently when we were at school and by my family. And so it's not a literary word that I used. It's a living words, and I think it helps get away from a more artificial diction. It's what I knew as a child, and so it helps me to express the feelings. And again, Edwin Morgan wrote good poetry in Scots, so it's a tribute.
So now we move on to Jen Hadfield, who actually is a published poet. Has been published, had two collections published by Blood Axe. You live in Shetland. Tell us, you're not Scottish, though. Tell us about that, your background.
Well, I was brought up just south of Manchester, and I moved to Edinburgh to study at 18, and then I went on to the MLit programme in Glasgow after I'd done my undergraduate degree. And there's been a fair bit of moving around in the middle, but I've washed up in Shetland, and I've been there for the last 6 years. 6.5 years, in fact, now. Yeah, it's gone quickly.
So, as a published poet, what does a competition like this for one poem mean to you?
It means quite a lot, actually. I've kind of havered over sending something in and just trying to work out for myself what this sort of anonymous competition represents. And it's been quite a long time since my second book. And in that time, I've not really been writing anything. And I've certainly not been reading any new work for a long time, some years. So it feels like starting from scratch again. And it's always felt like that with me. When I've started working on a new book, it's been very much relearning how to write a poem and relearning how poems work. So in a way, it's just a little bit of a way to ginger myself up to start sharing poems in the world again, and also just to help me see if they're working or not, in a way. So I'm so happy about this shortlisting, because I look at them and it's been very hard to tell how I rate them. I'm getting a bit of a better sense how they're working now. So.
And you say anonymous. Do you send the poems in anonymously without your name attached to them?
Yeah, and they go to some lengths on the website to enable that, in fact.
And there are thousands of entries.
That's right.
So actually, the fact that the five of you are sitting here is really quite remarkable, isn't it? Because I judged the Forward Prize, and I judged it with several poets on the panel, and I had a feeling that they very much were sort of navigating their way between known names, however much right. You try not to.
That must be the way the marketing works, I think. But.
So, Jen, you're going to read The Kids. Tell us a bit about this poem.
Right, well, I didn't expect this to turn out quite so creepy. In fact, it was intended to be a jovial, cheery poem about maybe 8-9-year-olds at that kind of age. And I remember being that kind of age and maybe a little bit younger and having that conviction of that you had special powers and you really believed in them. And it was kind of tapping on that I was first exploring. And the reason I chose to send this in the end was that it became something other than what I intended in the first place. And in this confusion about how to judge a poem, I think that's one of the gut feelings I work by. If something starts doing something I didn't intend, then I usually think that's better. So, The Kids. Born too soon, Monday's child was not ready to be seen, is destined to be early forever. She has a slice of red pepper, shaped like a question mark. The volcanic breath of Tuesday's child. He remembers where poetry comes from, the literal potential of things, which means he can't eat broccoli, seeing it right, a tiny, indigestible oak. He eats grated cheese with a teaspoon, assisting it with a finger. The hidden's the vocation of bird-like Wednesday's child, perfecting her dust baths with sweeping boughs of pine. She can find anything hidden in the dark, as a cat finds a rabbit, by the steam escaping the warren. Thursday's child says he saw Wednesday's child run so fast she began to fly. Thursday's child shall be called a liar. Friday is afraid of the suit of spades and jigsaw pieces the shape of the suit of spades. She's afraid of plug sockets, pylons, dams, flowered wallpaper. She knows what magic is, the stress we're under. Saturday's child is still growing into her eyes, lamps above her chin, a frog's eyes surfacing the muds of winter. She can't help what she does and doesn't see, salting away what she sees inside her. Sunday's child knows what blasphemy is and where the devil's grave. He makes the lovely graves of long grass and speedwell.
It's a lovely elegiac note to end on. So you're about to go off to the award ceremony, and it's being judged by Don Patterson and Gillian Ferguson, who are incredibly distinguished judges as well. May the best poet win. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the winner is Jen Hadfield with The Kids. In second place is Mike Vallely with Look Hamewood Now. And in third place, it's Malcolm Watson with The Perils of Surgery. Congratulations to all three of you. In fact, I'll rephrase that. Congratulations to all five of you.
Don't you Brits feel like celebrating those 14 days of sporting glory? Of course you do. So why not do it with a strictly unofficial but suitably stylish Philosophy Football Design t-shirt. This unique t-shirt is a wearable, chronological, and color-coded record of an unforgettable fortnight. And for Guardian and Observer podcast fans, we have a special offer of £3 off and free post and packaging. Curious? Well, to see how good this unique t-shirt looks and to take advantage of our listeners' offer, just go to guardian.co.uk/podcast offers. I dare you.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.